Hello, and welcome back to our very special study of the important question, when will the 70 weeks of Daniel chapter 9, 24 and following end? My name is Don K. Preston. I am the president of Preterist Research Institute of Ardmore, Oklahoma. And this question is far more than some kind of a dry, academic, strictly theological issue. No. Because you see, if, as many scholars admit, if, as I wrote in my book, 70 weeks are determined for the resurrection, if it is true that Daniel chapter 9, 24 to 27, is a prophecy of the consummation of all prophecy, the fulfillment of all prophecy, as I wrote in my book, Seal Up Vision and Prophecy, if that is true, then to determine when the 70 weeks ended or will end is to determine the time for the fulfillment of all Bible prophecy. And that would mean knowing the time of the fulfillment of the 70 weeks lets us know when the new heaven and new earth came, when the resurrection occurred or will occur, when the judgment, when the second coming would arrive or did arrive. It would be to determine and to know the time for the consummation of God's scheme of redemption. And it would be to know whether or not our redemption, our salvation is yet future, or whether now, by faith, we can live in the presence of God in full assurance of our salvation and our redemption. That's how important it is to be able to know when will or when was the 70 weeks of Daniel chapter 9, 24 and following fulfilled. Well, in our first three videos, we have explored the relationship between Daniel 2, Daniel 7, and Daniel chapter 9. We have done that for the following reason. Daniel chapter 2 spoke of the last days. The four beasts of Daniel chapter 2, the fourth beast in the days of those kings of that fourth empire, the days of Rome, the God of heaven would set up an everlasting kingdom that will never be destroyed. Well, Daniel chapter 2, therefore, foretold the establishment of the everlasting kingdom, a kingdom not made with hands. In other words, not an earthly kingdom. Daniel chapter 9 foretold the coming in of everlasting righteousness, which is the establishment of the everlasting kingdom of God. Oh, at the time of the resurrection. Now, since Daniel chapter 2, and please, if you haven't already, be sure to watch that video on Daniel 2 and Daniel 9. Since Daniel chapter 2 posits the establishment of the everlasting kingdom for the days of Rome, then that means that Daniel chapter 9 cannot be extrapolated beyond the days of Rome. Not a revived Roman Empire, but the first century Roman Empire. Number two, we examine Daniel chapter 7. It likewise brings us to and no later than the days of Rome, and it tells us about a little horn that would come up through the previous three kingdoms. That's so critical. Would come up through those previous three kingdoms, would persecute the saints, and would be destroyed at the coming of the Lord to receive the everlasting kingdom. Just like Daniel chapter 2. Well, once again, since Daniel chapter 7 cannot be extrapolated or protracted beyond the days of Rome, and since Daniel 7 is about the establishment of the kingdom, and the destruction of that little horn that came up through the previous three kingdoms, and in other words, it means it wasn't Rome. No, the beast was not Rome. It was Old Covenant Israel that in its socioeconomic, militaristic form persecuted the righteous saints of God throughout those histories. No, in the last days, of Daniel 2, verse 38. In the days of the Roman Empire, it was Israel that persecuted God's saints, and it was Israel that was destroyed in the days of the fourth empire for persecuting the saints. And it was in the days of the Roman Empire, therefore, that the Son of Man came on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory, fulfilling Daniel chapter 9. So now we come to Daniel chapter 12. Daniel chapter 12 is an incredibly important chapter. Now, we got to do a little bit of background examination here, a little bit of background evidence here in order to drive home what we're about to see. First of all, we need to realize that the vision of Daniel chapter 12 actually begins back in chapter 10. Now, what is so fascinating and important about this is that Daniel chapter 10, verse 14, Daniel was told by the angel, because you see, Daniel saw this vision, and he sought to know the meaning of it. Notice Daniel 10, verse 14. I, that's the angel, have come to make you understand what would happen to your people in the latter days. For the vision refers to many days yet to come. So, from the time of Cyrus, Daniel 10, verse 1, to the last days, which was a period of some 450 years, was a long time. Well, guess what? That kind of blows out of the water the idea that God can't tell time. God was referring to the period of time in which Daniel received that vision until the fulfillment about the final fate of Israel's people in the last days. And again, you know, look, I'm rounding the numbers off, but we're rounding it off to 450, 500 years, okay? Just rounding it off. I'm not trying to be precise. But God told Daniel, number one, the vision is about your people. Number two, it is about the fate of your people in the last days. And number three, the vision will not be fulfilled for a long time to come. So to God, a long time was 500 years. And thus, for instance, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, when we come to the book of Revelation, and Revelation reiterates the prophecies of Daniel 2, Daniel 7, and Daniel 12 especially, and Daniel 9, what do we find? Well, in Revelation chapter 12, I'm sorry, chapter 22, verse 10, John was told, do not seal up the vision of the prophecy of this book, for the time is at hand. Well, wait a minute. Daniel is told his vision about the fate of Israel was for a long time to come, 500 years. 500 years is a long time. Daniel chapter 12, Daniel was told, Daniel chapter 12, 9 and 10, seal up the vision of this book because it is for many days to come. It's a long time. So once again, 500 years, a long time. Versus Revelation, which reiterated the prophecies of Daniel, do not seal the book, for the time is at hand. What that tells us is that the fulfillment of Revelation, thus the fulfillment of Daniel's prophecy, that is the last day's fulfillment, could not have been 500 years away. That would be God contradicting himself. Daniel, 500 years, a long time. Daniel, 500 years, a long time. John, you're reiterating the prophecies of Daniel. Don't seal the book because it's at hand. And yet we're supposed to believe that the book of Revelation hasn't been fulfilled yet 2,000 years later. Folks, it makes no sense whatsoever. So once again, Daniel chapter 10 begins the vision. Now, the vision begins and spans the time of Darius the Mede. It brings us forward, and I'm going to skip over an awful lot of territory here. It brings us forward to the time of the Ptolemies and the Seleucids. During this intertestamental period of time, and the death, obviously the death of Alexander the Great, the arising of Antiochus Epiphanes, and how he persecuted the Jews. He punished the Jews for their rebellion against God, for their sin against God. And that's found in chapter 11, 34 and following. So, we are told by the, quote, liberal scholars, unquote, men such as John Collins, who is considered one of the leading authorities in the critical scholarship world on the book of Daniel. He believes that Daniel chapter 12 refers to the time of Antiochus Epiphanes. There are even some former full preterists who now take that view. There are some, quote, conservative scholars who adopt that view. I don't believe that view will stand the test. And here's the reason why. Now, by the way, I would recommend that you to get a copy of Dr. Dallas Burdett's book, Commentary on Daniel. He really has a fantastic study of chapters 10 through 12 in the book, and as you can see, it's a rather large book. He acknowledges the fact that finding the exact point of transition from the discussion of Antiochus Epiphanes to the days of Rome, which he, and I fully concur, which he believes is discussed in chapter 12 for sure, he acknowledges that that can sometimes be somewhat difficult. However, he gives some really good documentation from this. I would also recommend the book on the commentary of Daniel by Jim McGuigan. I would suggest that you get James Jordan's book, Handwriting on the Wall. I would suggest that you get Kurt Simmons's book, which is called Adumbrations, which is a rather strange name, but nonetheless, he's got some really, really good material in there. On the point of time in Daniel chapter 11, that the shift of focus turns away from Antiochus Epiphanes to Rome. That doesn't mean that Antiochus is not mentioned. But what it means is that all of a sudden, the focus is shifted away from him as the primary focus, and it turns to Rome. Now, I'm personally convinced that about verse 29, we see that transition take place. Let me read it. At the appointed time, he, that's Antiochus, and go toward the south. He went toward Egypt because it was his plan to go to Egypt and conquer Alexandria, to conquer Egypt because it was an extremely wealthy country. It grew grain that he needed for his empire. But it says, but it shall not be like the former or the latter. In other words, he wasn't going to be as successful as he was. Verse 30. For ships from Cyprus shall come against him, therefore he shall be grieved and return in rage against the Holy Covenant and do damage, so he shall return and show regard for those who forsake the covenant against the Jews. Now, as a point of fact of history, in 168 B.C., as Antiochus comes into Egypt, on the shores of the Sea of Alexandria, where he has his forces massed for the invasion, the Roman general by the name of Gaius Papilius, imagine naming a kid that. Anyway, now Gaius Papilius knew Antiochus personally. They had both been raised up in Rome. They had been friends as children. Gaius Papilius went on to become a senator. Antiochus Epiphanes became this great conqueror who tried to destroy Israel, by the way. Well, Rome was absolutely 100% on the ascendancy. And some commentators believe that in verses 29 and following, Antiochus Epiphanes had actually decided to align himself with Rome, knowing he could never defeat her. He could never do that. And by the way, Dr. Burdett documents all of that in his book. And I would also point out that Kurt Simmons does in his book. So you need to be aware of some of these sources that document from history the things that I'm sharing with you. I'm drawing upon their expertise. I'm not the world's greatest historian, but I can draw on the world's greatest historian. So here's what happens. Gaius Papilius meets Antiochus on the shore at Alexandria. And they evidently exchanged some pleasantries about their former life together in Rome, blah, blah, blah. And Gaius Papilius says to Antiochus, "You will not invade Egypt." Because you see, Rome had her eyes on Egypt as well because of her vast wealth and because of her grain supplies. So Gaius Papilius basically pointed the finger at Antiochus and said, "This is as far as you go. Withdraw, take your troops, take your army, and leave." Well, Antiochus knew he was in a bind. So he asked Gaius Papilius for some time. He said, I tell you what, let me think about it for a little bit. He was hoping that Papilius would withdraw his troops and he could go about his invasion. But in one of the more famous stories of all of that period of time, Gaius Papilius withdrew his sword, walked all the way around Antiochus Epiphanes, drawing a circle around him, put his sword back in the sheath, and said, "Make up your mind and give me your answer before you leave the circle." Wow. Now, once again, Antiochus knew his armies were no match for Rome. He was no dummy. He agreed to withdraw, and he did withdraw. And just like verse 30 says, he was grieved and he withdrew in rage. Now, about this time, you see, he understood and he knew that his laws and decrees that the Jews were to forsake Torah and worship the Grecian gods were being rebuffed. He knew the Jews were in rebellion. He knew he had to do something. So he left Alexandria, went back up to Jerusalem. He desecrated the temple. He did not destroy it. This is important. He marched into the city. He did not destroy it. But he had his general, Apollonius, I believe was his name, to offer a pig as a sacrifice on the altar and to persecute and to kill all Jews who would not obey him. Here's the point. From that point forward, Antiochus knew it was Rome that was in the ascendancy. While he certainly did a lot of damage from the point of verse 29 and 30, of that there is no doubt, and verse 31 and following continues to discuss him. The whole point of fact is, from that point forward, it was Rome that was in the ascendancy. And by the way, you see, there's a problem with trying to have the text continued to focus on Antiochus as the one in supremacy, because in verses 40 to 45, it discusses the ignominious demise of Antiochus. He's gone. Who's in charge? The Romans. The Romans who had humiliated him. And now that brings us, since the focus have shifted from Antiochus to Rome in the supremacy, we come to Daniel chapter 12, verse 1. At that time. Now, mind you, if we take Daniel chapter 11, 29 to 45, as talking about Antiochus, okay, then there's a really, really major problem here. Because chapter 12, verse 1 says, at that time, there shall be great tribulation, such as not been, nor ever shall be. Well, wait a minute. Verse 45 ends with the death of Antiochus. And listen, here is an undeniable historical fact. At the time of the death of Antiochus Epiphanes, there was no such great tribulation. Period. End of story. It's not even debatable. With the death of Antiochus Epiphanes, that Seleucid attempt, that Grecian attempt to destroy Israel, maybe not 100%, but to the majority extent, came to an end. It was not the Great Tribulation. However, and here's where we come to address the issue of the question, when did the 70 weeks of Daniel chapter 9 end? Because Daniel chapter 12, verse 1, obviously is talking about the time of the greatest tribulation, greater than anything that had ever been since there was a nation, or that ever shall be. Now, first of all, we might ask ourselves the question, is this simply hyperbolic, we might even say metaphoric language? We have to be aware of the fact that in the Bible, both Old Testament and New, we find many, many examples of the language that, for instance, even in the examples of the plagues of Egypt, in Exodus chapters 4 through 12, it, for instance, describes the plague of the locusts. And it says that plague of locusts that came on Egypt was the greatest plague of locusts that had ever been or that ever would be. Now listen, there have been plagues of locusts that can be described as literally billions and billions of locusts. And with those other of those plagues, a plague that was so great, such as had never been before. Then we come to Daniel chapter 9, 12 and following, in which Daniel, in Babylon, as a result of the Babylonian captivity and the Babylonian destruction of Jerusalem, he prayed unto the Lord and said, Lord, we recognize that it was because of our sin that you have brought this destruction on us, a destruction such as has never been. Lots and lots and lots of nations, lots and lots and lots of cities had been completely, utterly, totally destroyed prior to the Chaldeans destroying Jerusalem. And oh, by the way, the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD was greater. But you see, the point that I'm trying to make here is that we cannot, as my dispensational friends do, we cannot take that language in a woodenly literalistic manner. Because listen, the argument is made by the dispensationalists, well, that language of Matthew chapter 24, verse 21, as Jesus describes the coming great tribulation, for then shall be tribulation such as has not been, ever, or ever shall be. And they tell us, oh, well, look, that couldn't have been AD 70, because after all, World War I was worse. World War II was worse. They even go back. The pogroms under Attila, they were greater. Well, numerically, they might have been. But again, the point of the language is not precise mathematical greatness. And oh, by the way, let me remind you of this. If we want to focus on the language, Josephus, in describing the destruction of Jerusalem, actually said that the number of the people and the vastness of the deaths and the totality of destruction was such as had never been seen by mankind. Oh, wait a minute. Daniel said that of the destruction of Jerusalem in 586 B.C. Ezekiel said the same thing in Ezekiel 5, 8 and following, that the destruction of Jerusalem at the hands of the Babylonians was such as had never been or ever would be. And yet here's Josephus saying what happened in A.D. 70 was the worst thing that the world had ever seen. So I hope you can see that this language cannot be pressed to a woodenly literalistic extent. Now, got to hurry. We have seen, therefore, that there is a transition from the days of Antiochus Epiphanes to the days of Rome. Daniel 11:45 is the death of Antiochus Epiphanes. But if we take the language of Daniel chapter 12, verse 1, and its reference to the antecedent at that time, then it has to refer to the time of the death of Antiochus. But let me emphasize this. At the time of the death of Antiochus Epiphanes, it was not a time of great tribulation. It was actually a time of great rejoicing on the part of the Jews, I can tell you that. Because the driving force, the major dominating driving force of the Hellenizing movement and the persecution of the Jews did not continue to that extent as it had been under Antiochus. It's just a simple fact of history. So I am convinced that the statement at that time refers to that period of time. And again, once again, this is the view of Burdett, McGuigan, Jordan, and a vast host of other scholars. At that time is now referring to the time of the Roman Empire. And it was in the days of Rome in which the great tribulation would occur. Well, let's look at that. In Matthew chapter 24, verse 15, Jesus, speaking to his apostles, living, breathing men who are alive 2,000 years ago, he said, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, let the one who reads understand. And don't forget, Daniel was told in his vision of the great tribulation, and we'll talk about the abomination of desolation here in a moment. Daniel was told, Daniel didn't understand it. But he was also told at the time of the end, wisdom shall be increased. The wise will understand. Now Jesus is calling on his apostles to understand. And he said, when you see that which was spoken of by Daniel the prophet. Now I must take mention, a note of the fact that some try to say, well, Jesus wasn't saying that Daniel foretold the abomination of desolation for Jesus' day. No. Supposedly, what Jesus was saying is, remember, in the days of Antiochus Epiphanes, there was an abomination of desolation. Well, that's exactly right. In Daniel 11:31, there was an abomination of desolation. It was the profanation of the temple. But here's the key. That abomination of desolation in Daniel 11 did not bring about the full end of Israel. But you see, Daniel chapter 12, verse 7, is talking about the abomination of desolation that was going to come, verse 11. Oh, and Daniel chapter 9. And what would be the result of it? Well, Daniel asked, when shall all these things be? When shall all of these things be fulfilled? Actually, the angel asked that. And the other angel said, it shall be for a time, times and a half time, and when the power of the holy people has been completely shattered. Now listen to me very carefully. The power of the holy people was not completely shattered under Antiochus. When the attempt was made to destroy Torah observance, the Jews rebelled. They rejected that. They were actually able to retake Jerusalem, rededicate the temple, rededicate the altar, rededicate the city under the Maccabees. The power of the holy people simply was not completely shattered. And yet Jesus said to his apostles, when you see, now listen to me very carefully, when you see that which was spoken by the prophet Daniel, listen, listen, listen. He did not say, now remember that there was an abomination in the days of Antiochus Epiphanes, and when you see something like it, now, we might conjecture and we say, well, since there was an abomination in Daniel 11, Jesus might have been saying, yeah, what's going to happen is going to be like that. Well, again, that abomination did not lead to the total destruction of Israel. What Jesus is talking about did lead to the total destruction of Israel. So, was Jesus saying what happened back then in Daniel 11:31, a type of what was going to happen in the last days? Don't forget, Daniel chapter 10, verse 14, I'm going to show you what's going to happen to your people in the last days. So you see, oh, by the way, Jesus appeared in the last days. So, and I've got to hurry here. So we have Jesus saying, or Daniel being told, at that time, the days of the Roman Empire, that would be the Great Tribulation. When would that take place? Well, it would be in the days of the abomination of desolation. Daniel chapter 12, verse 11, from the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away and the abomination of desolation is set up, there shall be 1,290 days. I would recommend that you read Kurt Simmons' book on that, as well as Burdett's calculations of the 1,290 days and the 1,335 days. But since my time is running out so rapidly here, let me take note of this. Daniel chapter 9, abomination of desolation, Daniel 9:27. Great tribulation, i.e. destruction of Jerusalem. Daniel 9, at the end of the 70 weeks. Daniel 12, the Great Tribulation, abomination of desolation, fulfilled when? When the power of the holy people has been completely shattered. Now, we have to face this. Daniel chapter 12 is about the complete and total destruction of the power of the holy people, i.e., Torah. The complete removal of the Torah. Torah was Israel's only power. Without her covenant relationship with Yahweh, Israel had no power. You got to remember that. So Daniel chapter 12 is talking about abomination of desolation, great tribulation in Israel's last days. Remember, Daniel chapter 12 talks about the appointed time of the end. And remember, Daniel 10 to 12 talked about the appointed time of the end of the last days of Daniel's people. Well, guess what? In Daniel chapter 9, we have the appointed time, the 70 weeks. And Daniel 9, overwhelming destruction of Jerusalem and the temple. The people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. Again, Daniel 9:26. Well, what did the sanctuary represent? Torah. So in both Daniel 9 and Daniel 12, we have exact, precise parallels. But what I just mentioned is not all. Remember, Daniel chapter 9 is talking about the coming of the kingdom, bringing in of everlasting righteousness. Well, Daniel chapter 12, verse 2 and following. Many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to everlasting condemnation. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness in the firmament. Those who turn many to righteousness, like the stars forever and ever. But you, Daniel, shut up the words, seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and the knowledge shall be increased. Daniel 9, everlasting righteousness. Daniel 12, everlasting righteousness. Daniel 9, 70 weeks, no later than AD 70, the appointed time of the end. Daniel chapter 12, the appointed time of the end. Daniel chapter 9, abomination of desolation. Daniel 12, abomination of desolation. Daniel 9, bringing in of everlasting righteousness. Daniel chapter 12, the shining forth in righteousness of those who would survive the great tribulation, by the way. And again, Daniel 9, time of the end. Daniel chapter 12, time of the end. Daniel chapter 9, the resurrection. Yeah, the bringing in of everlasting righteousness, the new heaven, the new earth, wherein dwells righteousness, the time of the resurrection, and Daniel chapter 12, verse 2. Many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall arise, some to everlasting life, some to everlasting condemnation. Ladies and gentlemen, the parallels between Daniel 9 and Daniel chapter 12 are too clear. Once again, Daniel chapter 9 cannot be extended beyond the days of the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. Daniel chapter 12 cannot be extended beyond the time of the destruction of the power of the holy people, the end of God's covenant with Israel. Well, God's covenant with Israel would be terminated when all things promised to her would be fulfilled. Matthew 5, 17 and 18. When would all of those promises, when would that covenant be fulfilled? Jesus is clear. Luke 21, 22. In describing the impending fall of Jerusalem in AD 70, these be the days of vengeance in which all things that are written must be fulfilled. Now remember, he's talking about the fall of Jerusalem. Daniel 9 is talking about the fall of Jerusalem at the end of the 70 weeks. And thus Jesus posits the end of the 70 weeks in AD 70. We have no justification whatsoever for extrapolating or for protracting the end of the 70 weeks beyond AD 70. And that means that the dispensational view of a separated, divorced 70th week from the 69 is misguided and misplaced. It means that the view that the 70 weeks ended in 34 or 35 AD is wrong. And guess what? We've got a whole lot more on this. We're going to be looking at the constituent elements of Daniel chapter 9, verse 24. 70 weeks are determined to take away sin, to make the atonement, to finish the transgression, to seal vision and prophecy, etc., etc. So we're going to be looking at each one of those constituent elements one by one to demonstrate the 70 weeks did not end at the cross, the 70 weeks did not end in 34 or 35 AD, and the 70 weeks are not yet 70th week is not yet future. I know you're going to be looking forward to that. So I'll see you there.